I've got something really special for you today. So today is the book launch for my, at least personally, long anticipated book, I'm New to Government Contracting, Where Do I Start? Today, you can get the book for $9.95 on Amazon, which is roughly 60% off the normal price the book's going to be. I'm going to start off with this quick promo here of if you want a copy of this book, which you want a copy of this book, I highly recommend you go grab it today, March 26, 2024. Go grab a copy on Amazon today. You're going to get it for a great price. Now, I want to get into the book a little bit and talk to you about this. Don't let the title fool you on this book. While it's called I'm New to Government Contracting, Where Do I Start? This book is not for just new entrepreneurs. This book is for existing businesses. I've handed it over to clients to preview well before the book launch. People have gotten back to me and said, I can't imagine where I would be today had I had this book. And oh, by the way, I've learned so much from reading it. So people that have been in this business 5, 10, 15 years have taken a look at this book and given me feedback and said, there's a lot that I took away from this, a lot of lessons learned in here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to cover really quickly for you today a little bit of what's in all the chapters. There's 31 chapters in this book, all really, really good stuff. And I also have an acronym list at the end of the book. It's an additional kind of appendix that I threw in there at the end, because I know there's a lot of acronyms that we've never heard of, especially if you're new to the government. It's really nice to have that list so you can go through all those. We tried to spell them out going through the book as much as we could as well. Let me dive in and talk to you a little bit about the book. So chapter one is my journey, how I got into this market. It started with me in the Army. I was watching a lot of other soldiers get out and become government contractors, followed suit, became a government contractor myself. Didn't know anything about sales and marketing or business or any of that kind of stuff. And I learned it all the hard way. In fact, Josh and I learned it together. So my partner, Josh Frank, and I met almost 22 years ago. We were working for a small government contractor, learning this stuff for ourselves. And I talk about that a little bit in the book, a little bit about our story, how we turned around a failing division and got to a point where we were doing 11 plus million a year in sales in about 18 months. We took a division that was doing roughly $1 million in government and did 11 plus million in 18 months. So I think that's a pretty fast turnaround. There's a lot of other cool little stories in there. One of them is about how I probably wound up on the FBI's most wanted list. So you can read a little bit about that. Some other great stuff. All the changes we made to take that company from failing to successful. Then chapter two gets into some myth busting and lessons learned. There's so many things that I found that are what I would consider either a hard lesson learned, or they are something where I thought this was the truth and it wasn't. So that's where the myths come in, right? And you'll see things particularly about different statuses and how those work and how contracting works. And there's just some really good myth busting that happens in that chapter to prove a lot of what you hear about how to get into this market is not correct. And I steer you in the right direction in that chapter. Chapter three gets into the middleman strategy and why I feel what is being portrayed right now in the market is nothing more than a scam to sell courses. There's a lot of people in the market, some of them highly respected people, which really irks me. Some highly respected people in the market and some people that are brand new who are mostly using ChatGPT and the concept of, hey, why don't you just pick stuff to sell to the government and make that happen? I even do like a financial model a little bit there so you can get a sense of why it's such a hard strategy and why we don't recommend it. We don't teach it. We don't work with clients that are trying to go down this road. I try to steer them down the right road. It's just not a good strategy for government contracting. The next one is how to identify and avoid con artists. Why did I deal with the middleman strategy and con artists up front instead of getting into other things? Because when you get in this business, just like politics is filled with lawyers and politicians and all those kind of things, this business, for some reason, I guess it's just because it's government, is filled with scam artists. And I want you to be able to spot those things because I'm telling you, you can be suckered for $5, $10, $15, $20, $50,000 really, really fast. And you may be saying, Mike, there's no way that's going to happen to me. Look, I know people way smarter than me who have been suckered. And so I go through how to identify that because early on in your journey is where you're likely to be approached the most for some sort of con artist. I want you to be able to avoid that. I often run into these situations where I will meet with a new client. They'll talk to me about, hey, we've been in the business 2-3 years. As they're going through what they've gone through, they'll say, look, we hired this person and this is what we went through and we lost all this money and it's tens of thousands of dollars. So I walk you through some of those stories and I also walk you through how to identify that so you can avoid it. So that's chapter 4, identifying and avoiding con artists. In chapter 5, I get into, is government contracting right for you? There's a lot of little questions that you need to be asking yourself. Some of those are about your financial stability, about how long you've been in the business, what you're willing to do in this market, whether it's making calls, those kind of things. Trying to help you determine, is the market even big enough for you to be in it? Are you restricted geographically or in some other way? Maybe you own a franchise and you're restricted to a territory or something along those lines. So there's a lot of little questions that you should ask yourself before you get into this market. And I ask a lot of those in chapter 5, is government contracting right for you? And if you get through all of that and you decide you want to make the leap, chapter 6 jumps into procurement and really business readiness. It walks through certifications. It walks through websites you need to get registered in. It walks through getting your business ready, your back office, all those kind of things to actually chase contracts. Number 7 is picking your niche. I really like this one because it is one of the most common things that I deal with when I work with a new client. A new client will come to me and say, Mike, we can do 18 different services. We can sell 16 different products. I don't know where to focus. Picking your niche is really about not just your product or service niche and how to find that flagship product or service, but also the agency, because you should be targeting an agency. One of the challenges that government contractors have is they get into this business, typically either it's the first business they've owned or they're in the commercial space and they're trying to diversify their footprint by getting in here, and they don't necessarily have a lot of knowledge of how the government works. And so there's a learning curve with government contracting. I want to eliminate one of the other learning curves, which is your niche. So if you get in here and you used to be in software engineering, I don't necessarily want you going into a product business selling servers or selling janitorial supplies or some other type of business that you don't know, where there's a steep learning curve. So if you come in this business, we take a look at what your background is, you know, what you know about, who you've worked for, those kind of things. And we try to match up your flagship product or service with the agencies you're going to target. Quick example of this, and I'll move on. If you are in law enforcement, why not work in law enforcement type of agencies such as DOJ, FBI, DHS, areas like that, instead of trying to focus on the CDC where you don't speak the language? So we try to match those two things up so they intersect at a really good spot where you lower the learning curve and that's faster entry into the market. That's a little bit about picking your niche in chapter 7. Chapter 8 gets into branding yourself and your company. Now, most people think branding is all about your logo, the look and feel and all that, but branding is really about a customer service centric approach to how you approach your business. And branding is also about how you communicate things about your company, like the megaphone that you use on social media and in books and YouTube and podcasts and all those different types of things to communicate what you're about and how you do it. But ultimately, it comes down to customer service and how you execute on the promises you make. So that is chapter 8, branding yourself and your company. Chapter 9 is about social media strategy considerations. Social media is essential to this business. And you may be thinking, well, it's not like a normal business where I'm selling coconut water or whatever, or I'm selling pants or shirts or hoodies or hats. It's not like that where I'm trying to get 100 million subscribers and sell a bunch of products or, you know, it's not like that. But used strategically, social media can help you connect with your buyers. It can help with your teaming partners. It can help with pushing you out in the market so that you create inbound leads. Because the challenge most people have in this market is everything sales related is outbound. They're making phone calls. They're submitting RFIs, RFPs, RFQs. It's all outbound activity, We want to create inbound activity, and social media is a great way to do this. And I walk through several strategies on how to do that. Chapter 10, we get into our intro into value mapping. Value mapping is a process that we've developed here at Artisan Federal. Josh Frank, my partner, developed that. And it's where you learn how to communicate your value in your corporate overview, on your website, in your marketing material, in proposals, in capability briefs. We walk through this process. And in the process, you are going to learn how to go through your past contracts and identify key metrics and value that you can now incorporate into your corporate overview. I have put several corporate overview examples into this chapter so that you get an idea of what real value looks like. Real value is not just buzzwords. Real value is metrics. When I think metrics, I think of us. We've helped our clients win $14.5 billion. Since 2008. That's a metric. It's a wow factor. We've trained 24,000 contractors. Those are wow factors. You have some wow factors. Those numbers may not be as big, but I guarantee you, you have some of those wow factors that you can put in there. And chapter 10 will help you learn how to identify those. Chapter 11 talks about 9 core marketing tools. We get into things like your business card, your signature block, your capability statement, your capability brief, all of those tools that are essential for government contractors, and that's in Chapter 11. Chapter 12 is 7 key elements of a great capability statement. Not only do we talk about the tools in Chapter 12, I actually break down the most important one, which is your capability statement, what all the sections are that are essential to be in it, what you need to do with it, how you use it, all that kind of good stuff. Chapter 13, I get into sales goals and metrics. This is where a lot of the rubber meets the road. How are you going to figure out what should be in your pipeline? What kind of activity you should have on a daily, weekly, monthly basis? All of those metrics in there that you need to be thinking about, you've probably never considered. That is in chapter 13. Chapter 14 is 7 key ways to build your pipeline. A lot of folks understand how to use SAM. That's probably the most common one that you know how to use. But there are a lot of other ways to build your pipeline. I dive into how to do that, not just by looking for expiring contracts and things like that, but we get pretty creative in this to show you ways to help build your pipeline. So again, you're filling it up with opportunities you can respond to. Chapter 15 is about managing your pipeline. Once something goes in fact, it goes beyond that. Before something goes in, how do you determine what goes in? And then once you get something in the pipeline, how do you work it through the stages? What are the stages of your pipeline? Do you use a CRM? All those kind of things. We walk through that in chapter 15, managing your pipeline. Chapter 16 is 6 ways to reach contracting officers. This is one of my favorite chapters simply because a lot of people don't understand how to find a contracting officer and how to reach out to them. They think, okay, I can call and I can email. Those are the 2 main ones. Yes, those are 2, but they're nuances to how you go about it to make sure you're successful at actually reaching the contracting officer. And that's what I go through in that chapter. Number 17 is capability briefings. I actually walk you through what a capability brief is, if you've never heard one of those. And then I walk you through how to manage that with a contracting officer. Because once you get a hold of a contracting officer, one of the key things that you're trying to do is schedule a capability brief with them. That's where you get the opportunity to give them an overview about your company. But more importantly, you can talk to them about what's going on in their organization and how you can help them with their challenges. Chapter 18 is 7 tips for writing better emails. One of the biggest challenges that clients have is they write these novels to people in this business, whether it's a contracting officer or a teaming partner, and they spill their guts in the novel. It could be 2, 3, 4, 5, 17 paragraphs, whatever it is, and you don't get responses that way. I show you in this chapter how to actually get a response, and there's a template in there that you can use to get a response from somebody. There's 7 tips for writing better emails. Chapter 19 is about teaming with other companies. Ultimately, when you are starting out in this business, you need to learn how to team with other companies. It's not just a short-term strategy. It's a long-term strategy for growing your business. And we walk you through how to avoid the pitfall of reaching out, having a great first call, and then it never going anywhere. So we go through that in that chapter. The next chapter is 8 ways primes evaluate subcontractors that goes with the teaming side. Because from the moment you start interacting with a teaming partner, they are evaluating you. They're trying to determine if they want to work with you, how they want to work with you, if they like you, all of those kind of things. And this chapter helps you understand what they're thinking and how you can respond to that in order to make them choose you over someone else. Chapter 21 is RFIs and sources sought. RFIs and sources sought are a great way to actually prep the government for an RFP. We use a term called ghosting. In those RFIs and sources sought, you can actually ghost your capabilities, which allows you to show your strengths and actually expose the weaknesses of your clients, make suggestions to the government, but more importantly, hopefully tee up an RFP so that it looks like it was written for you. Then we get into chapter 22, which is the RFP process. I break that down into 3 segments: before, during, and after, so you can see what you should be doing before you write an RFP, what you should be doing during that process, and then after the RFP. It breaks down a bunch of different components, and you can use that as a checklist for your RFP system. The next chapter, 23, is about simplified acquisition and micro purchases. This breaks this down for you so you understand what simplified acquisition is, what percentage of this should be in your pipeline, what a micro purchase is, how those happen. And more importantly here, I just wanted to educate people on what this is. I don't teach a ton about this because it's often looked at a little bit like the middleman strategy as low-hanging fruit, when in reality, there's no real low-hanging fruit in the government, but this is an acquisition option that you can talk to your contracting officers about, and I want to make sure you're educated on it. Chapter 24 is the introduction to contract vehicles. This is where we get in and actually talk about what a contract vehicle is, how to get them, how to use them, how to choose what's right for you. And then I also talk about, I think I list maybe a half dozen major contract vehicles that you could look at to see if any of those are a good fit for your business. So that's a really, really good chapter for people who don't understand contract vehicles and how they work. Chapter 25 is about preparing to kick off a new contract. There's all kinds of things that you should be doing once you win a contract. Most people tend to freak out and go, what do we do now? This will help you build your checklist because I have all kind of bulleted items in here of what you should do with your team for a kickoff, what you should do with your client, your teaming partners, kickoff wise. So you know how to run those meetings, get those done to increase the odds of success during a contract. The next one is mentor protege. That's chapter 26. I get into the mentor protege program. Again, it's not low hanging fruit. I want to frame this properly for you so you understand how to approach it, how to choose a mentor, what to look for in them, what the rules are to make sure you are following the eligibility piece, your mentor's following the eligibility piece, and how to make this successful. The mentor protege program is awesome. Oh, by the way, I said the mentor protege program. There's mentor protege programs with an S. There's several programs that you can look at. And I want you to take a look based on who you sell to, which ones of those programs are the right ones for you. Chapter 27 gets into key hires along the way. There are about a half a dozen positions that are critical to your success. One of those is a business developer. One of those is an assistant. One of those is a proposal writer, maybe a proposal manager. There's several different roles. I break those down. I put them in an order of what I think is probably the most important to you. However, just depending on your needs, depending on your skills as an entrepreneur, you may choose a different one. But I wanted to highlight some of the ones that are really important and you should be thinking about as you're trying to scale your business. So those are all in there, the descriptions and what to look for in those. Chapter 28 is about conferences. I don't just talk about what a conference is and how you should attend them. I walk through how to prep for a conference, how to look for the right conference, as well as what are the top conferences in this industry. I give you my personal list of the ones we attend, as well as all of the ones that are constantly on our radar, because we kind of rotate back and forth on some of them. We have our 4 or 5 main core conferences, and then we have the others that we mix in from time to time. Those are all in there. Chapter 29 is a chapter that has been asked about probably since the day I got into this business. It is a list of FAR references, and these are mostly around the small business programs and things that you will see show up in an RFP so that you can be aware of what these FAR references are. If you don't know what the FAR is, that is the Federal Acquisition Regulations. That is the guidebook or law book, if you will, for government contracting. I also break in the CFR and DFARs. I'll save that for the book so you can get into that and learn a little bit more about what those are. Then the 30th chapter is the marathon mindset. This is where I get into how you need to think long-term in order to be successful in this market. And so it's a really great chapter on setting goals, the way you need to think, and just how to be successful as a government contractor. This is probably the guiding light for most people on how to think long-term and be patient in this market. The final chapter, 31, is about hiring a coach. And this is where I get in and talk about not just what to look for in a coach, but how to pick one, how to get the right personality fit, the right core values fit, and all of those types of things so you can choose the right coach. It doesn't have to be us. It can be anybody. I just want you to be armed with some information that can help you identify people who are maybe in that scam category from the real deals and hopefully help you figure out when and where to hire a coach. And then the last thing I threw in there, again, this is not one of the official chapters. It's just an acronym list for you. That's it in a nutshell. 31 chapters, an acronym list, a lot of information. Again, whether you are brand new to the business, whether you've been in it 30 years, I guarantee you're going to learn a lot from this. If you're hearing this podcast on March 26, 2024, go to Amazon right now after you listen to this and go buy a copy of I'm New to Government Contracting. Where do I start? I guarantee you, you will not be disappointed. We'll see you next episode. I really hope you enjoyed the podcast today. If you did, I would really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to the podcast and screenshot it and tag me on LinkedIn or whatever social media you use. So thank you again for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.